At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. This is a special Best of Caller Questions InvestTalk compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. They will be played and answered on an upcoming InvestTalk podcast.
Welcome to InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. We try to bring you useful information and answer any questions you might have, as long as they're financial. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Jason, San Diego, how you doing, Jason?
Good, good. I recently changed jobs and I rolled my 401k over into a IRA, and it's got about $14,000 in it, and that's about all the investments that I have. Now I'm wondering, what do I do with it? It's not really enough money that I feel like I should invest in individual stocks. Do I buy a mutual fund or a couple mutual funds, or what do I do with about $14,000?
You buy several mutual funds, not one, not two. Maybe at $14,000, I would probably buy maybe four.
Okay.
Okay. If you're in a 401k, you may not have very many choices, though.
Well, I rolled it over into an IRA now that I changed jobs.
Okay, okay.
So that's why I'm wondering, what do I do? I only had limited choices before.
Right, okay.
And now it's wide open.
Okay. I would roll it over into either Fidelity Investments, you know, with all the Fidelity mutual funds. They have a program, a no-load, no-transaction fee program over there where you can buy any no-load mutual fund, not just Fidelity, all of them. And so does Schwab. They have what's called a Schwab One program that does the same thing. I'm not pushing one company over another. I don't have an axe to grind either way.
Sure.
But they have programs that you can buy a number of mutual funds, no load and no transaction fee. The problem they have, though, is there's usually a holding period, which I don't like. 90 days, you can't sell it within 90 days of your purchase. But you're probably not going to sell it that soon. But, you know, for me, I don't like the restrictions. But for you, it'd probably be fine. Then once you do that, you want to pick some good funds, some very good funds. Where's the custodian now, Jason?
Scottrade now.
Okay, Scottrade is not a bad place to be. You can buy mutual funds in Scottrade. Even if you buy no-load funds, they might charge you a trading fee. It's called a transaction fee. Find out what that is, okay? And my guess will be between $20 and $30.
Okay.
You can do it from Scottrade. Just find no load, no transaction fee funds.
They've got a list of hundreds of funds that are like that, that say that they're in their program with no commission or fee or
anything. Perfect. They don't have a transaction fee?
Well, they've got a list of funds that don't, and it's a pretty respectable list.
Then you're going to pick from that list, Jason, because I'll guarantee you there's at least four of them over there that are pretty good quality funds. Look for a good mid-cap and maybe small cap growth and value. And also, one of your four picks should be a international fund.
Okay.
Maybe 20% in the international.
Because I had debated over whether to have four funds like you just mentioned, or just get one total market or S&P 500 or some.
I understand that. And one of your funds could be an index fund. That's not a problem. If you're sticking with the market for long-term, index funds are fine. I would suggest, though, that you can probably do a little bit better if you find a good manager of the mutual funds. So go to Morningstar.com and check out the funds. See what their ratings are. See how they're done against their peer group. Are they always in the top tier of their peer group? If they are, that's the fund you want.
When you look at the Morningstar and they have 4- and 5-star funds, some folks have told me that 5-star fund is maybe all played out and that you might want to look for a good 4-star fund. Is that correct or no?
I'm right in line with those folks, whoever told you that. I like 3- and 4-star funds. The underachievers that are trying to be overachievers, as opposed to the overachievers that have already achieved. I have found in my studies that five-star funds generally underperform going forward.
Should I be worried about the size of the fund at all or not?
Yes. Well, you're asking some good questions. I like not to have more than a couple of billion dollars. I like to have a few hundred million dollars under management. I don't like the big ones. Why? Because they become the whole market and you might as well buy an index fund.
Yeah.
So stay away from the big guys.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call. Very good question. See, now that's a perfect question for everybody else to listen to. It's a really good question.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Good morning. This is Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I have a question on your services. If we get a portfolio review and we still have a lot more questions, is there still a possibility where we can pay for the hour? I'm sure that would probably help a lot of listeners for other options, but just curious about that. Looking forward to the answer and have a great day. Bye.
Interesting question. We do portfolio reviews for our listeners all the time. I did one earlier today, and we go over the portfolios, different portfolios, put it into a report, show the different sectors that you're in, what are you overweight and underweight, and give a sense of, from a big picture, which direction you should be moving, and then particular names that are probably should be jettisoned, maybe others that you need to lean a little bit more on, etc. And then maybe we become the advisor if that's not something that you want to do yourself. But for there's no charge to that. It's free. But if you're a client, you can call us and reserve a time on my calendar whenever you want. So that's something that is just part of being a client. It's just direct access to schedule a call with me. But great question, and thanks for making it.
You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. With total downloads nearing 50 million, each InvestTalk podcast should be one of your key financial planning and educational tools. InvestTalk is a free download, and hosts Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to provide their unbiased guidance and professional analysis developed from real-time data research and years of investing experience. 24/7, rain or shine, during smooth sailing or on rough weather days, the InvestTalk listener line is open and waiting for your questions. You set the agenda. Don't forget to call. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Alan in San Francisco, he wants to talk about investing.
Hi, Justin.
Yes.
Like, if I wanted to see if, like, an investor like Howard Marks, like, what he was buying, like, in real time, I know that they do that on the 13F reports, but I was just wondering if there's a way, like a website, where like I could see what whale investors are buying in real time, so I don't have to wait for the 13F report to come out. I'm not sure if that's possible or not.
Well, you're not going to get it before the 13F. That's these large investors. They're not going to release their purchases unless they have to, and that's through the 13F. Now, there are websites. Guru Focus is one where they basically aggregate all the 13Fs, but it's lag data, obviously. But you're not going to get it before it's released in the 13F, most likely, unless you have some sort of insider at their large entities. So, it's nice to follow, but it's also difficult to get in right when you're never going to get in. When they buy, and by the time you find out, it might be a higher price. So, it's something to think about, something to help guide you, but definitely never use that as gospel as well, because every investor can be wrong.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. That helps a lot. I appreciate it.
No problem, Alan. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jane in the Bay Area.
Hello, Justin.
Hi, Jane. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I wanted to ask you, I got some cash sitting in the settlement fund at Vanguard, and I've been thinking about maybe investing that money. It's money just I don't need. I just want for security reasons, and whether I should invest in treasury note, 2 year or short term.
Well, we don't love treasuries itself. If you want something that's super safe, I would be going and buying some of those mm-hmm. I-bonds, right? $10,000 a year. That's where I would probably start. You're going to get better than treasury rates right now, and you're gonna at least get that for the next year. Whereas 2 year treasuries, that could, you know, you could lock yourself into four, but that's only 2 years. And I think in I-bonds, you're going to get better over the next 2 years. So that's where I would go. You know, it depends how much risk you want to take. That would be the low risk play. I think the best low risk play. If you want to go a little bit higher in the risk scale, I think high grade corporates going out 4 to 7 years. Yeah, that's yielding close to 7%. We're getting north of 7 on a lot of those bonds. I think that's another good place to be if you're trying to be relatively relatively conservative. Then obviously you get into equities, that becomes more of a risk there. So it just depends on how much risk you really want to take.
I don't really want to take risk on this one.
Yeah.
I just want to park in the safe place.
Okay. Yeah, then the safest, the best safe vehicle right now would be those I-bonds. And then you could also buy treasuries through treasurydirect.net. So maybe a little bit of those would make sense if you're trying to deploy more than $10,000. But if it's less, just do the I-bonds. Anything more, you could do some short-term treasuries. I don't have a problem with that.
Because I'm thinking about at least $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So is that buy I-bond?
Well, I guess you can. If you're doing 800,000, you're not going to get a whole lot of I-bonds for that. Once again, 2 year treasuries, you're going to lock in 4% for 2 years, but that's about it. We rather at these levels lock in longer term, taking a little bit more risk in high grade corporates, and get nearly double the yield. And you know, because the odds of a rate cut by the Fed over the next year or two is pretty high. So the fact in 2 years, if you buy a 2 year treasury at 4% now, in 2 years when that matures, the odds of you getting 4% again are fairly low. So I think you're going to be better served by taking a little bit of risk, a little bit, by buying high grade corporates and getting that 7%. Thanks for the call.
The InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes.
I have a question for you about Amazon.
So your questions keep coming.
I have a question about PE ratios.
And that's okay, because Steve Peasley and Justin Klein specialize in unbiased guidance.
If I'm looking at a dividend company, I'm looking for consistency of earnings and dividends.
Your standard daily chart typically goes back 1 year.
Steve and Justin are fearless, so don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Gentlemen, John from Texas, appreciate what y'all do. Y'all are the consistent part of my day. Thank you. Question on volume and really just capitulation. So if you're looking at a stock chart and some of the data on it, when you're looking for capitulation, is there a general rule as to where what you're looking at, say, volume is three times the average all of a sudden that day, or compared to, you know, that day versus 3 months? What are you looking for on a capitulation type day, and where do you find it? Like if you didn't get to look at the market for a day or two and you saw a big movement, so you go to research it, where do you look for that volume, and how do you know what really truly is? Is it two times, three times the amount that the activity of the investors is showing you? Okay, you know, sentiment is this and that. What do you look for in terms of volume and capitulation? Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
Well, you pretty much nailed it. It's typically about 3 to 4 times the average daily volume. And we look back about 50 days, for example. I just have Signature Bank still up from the previous caller. The average daily volume on that is about, call it 800,000 shares. So if you had 2.5 million plus in a particular day, and it was trading down big because this is in a downtrend, right? And maybe reverse. You want to probably get some sort of reversal as well, not just that it's down and stays down. You want it to be down and in reverse. You know, remember, like we talked about top of the show, two Thursdays ago, you had that big down day and reversal on big volume on the S&P. That was a capitulation type of day. So this is, yeah, you want to look at 3 to 4 times average daily volume. Okay, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We want to answer your questions. Our listener line number is always ready for you. 888-99-CHART, beginning our experience. We're here to answer your question.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, Justin. Hi, Steve. This is Joyce from New Jersey. Thank you for a very informative show. Could you please give your opinion about NEA, tax-exempt municipals, in a taxable account, which pays a nice dividend? Again, thank you for a great podcast.
All right. I'll start with the first question, which is tax-exempt municipals in a taxable account. This is typically best for if you're in a high tax bracket, pretty much the highest. You have to make a lot of money, be very wealthy, and just paying, a marginal rate of 50%. Typically for, it depends on what state you're in, but let's call it, the highest federal tax bracket. And then those are usually fairly good investments if you're smart about it. I don't know what exactly municipals you're looking at, but that's typically only who it's good for. Why? Is because those that are very wealthy and are in that high tax bracket, they're going to drive prices of munis up to a level where the yield is so low that it's tax advantage for them. But if you're not in the highest tax bracket, you much rather be in taxables, pay that lower tax rate, and your effective yield is typically going to be higher, right? Whereas them, if those in the high tax bracket, they don't want to buy those taxables because their effective tax rate will be probably at or lower than what their municipals are yielding them. Okay, so only if you're in a very high tax bracket, okay?
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where they describe their services as independent thinking, shared success. And this philosophy is why KPP Financial can be of great value to investors. KPP principals Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are committed to unbiased guidance. They don't upsell clients into expensive and questionable investments. Instead, Steve and Justin provide honest opinions and proven strategies based on the individual's current portfolio and risk tolerance. Working with KPP Financial, you can be assured of consistent dedication toward the goal of helping you achieve financial freedom. You can get things started with a phone call or a simple message through investtalk.com. The Invest Talk radio and podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I've been listening for a long time to your show and I've learned a lot. Really appreciate it. I recently sold a house, and what I'm doing with the proceeds of the house is I've decided to buy corporate bonds and hold them to maturity. Merrill Lynch has a secondary bond market where I buy bonds from people who already owe them. And my question is, when I look at these bonds available on the secondary market, can I trust basically that whether I'm paying above par or below par, and after I pay accrued interest, can I trust that if I just hold that bond to maturity? And if not, can you tell me what to look for when I'm shopping on the secondary market? Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, on the secondary market, you're looking for yield to maturity. Yield to maturity. You're not looking at just the plain yield. Oh, it pays 5%, pays 7%, pays 2%. No, you want it because you can be paying above par or below par for the bond, right? Par is what they initially issued the bond. For instance, $10,000 bond, 5% for 5 years, you get exactly that. 5% for 5 years, and you get the money back. But after the market, in the secondary market, after the bonds have been issued, people can trade them, and they do. So the number one item that you're looking at is, what is my yield to maturity? How much money, whether I pay above par or below par, will I earn if I hold it to maturity? How much will I eat? How much will my yield per year for that bond? So yield to maturity, that's what you're looking for. Yield to maturity, not just the plain yield. Okay? Very important. Very, very important when you buy bonds. Bonds are a little tricky. But, you know, don't buy junk. Try to stay away from junk. The sweet spot is probably triple B in that area. That's where I like to be, because you get your highest yield, not taking a lot of risk, but just barely below investment grade. Because most companies don't go bankrupt. You'll still get your money, that kind of thing.
Now let's pivot back to the Vestock Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier at 888-99-CHART.
Yes, hi there. I have a question about CD rates. My brokerage firm is offering 4.55 12-month CDs and 24-month 4.7% CDs, both non-callable. And wondering if this is the time to lock in, or should I wait till next month to see what the Feds do? All right, thanks.
Well, the Fed will raise rates, but I think next month, but it's going to probably have a minimal impact on CD rates. But it probably will have they probably will go up some. And you are looking at the right time, I think, to lock in those rates, because I think they're very close to the end. This might be the last, it's very potentially the last Fed rate hike for this cycle, especially if you start to continue to see economic data like you had from the Kansas City Manufacturing Index today. And so, if you're trying to be super safe, not take any risk, I'd probably wait until after the Fed rate hike to lock that in. But understand, that's locked in.
You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
To an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, I have a question for Steve or Justin concerning real estate. I'm thinking about putting investment property on the market, but I was told to possibly get more people interested is to offer carrying back a loan. So I just wanted to see what your thoughts are on that, what the pros and cons are in doing that, because the interest rate is so high that I guess potential buyers would be having a negative cash flow on the property, and I would rather not carry a loan back, but just wanted to see what your thoughts are in this environment. So, or also just wait until interest rates go back down. I'll be listening to the answer on your show. Thank you.
Well, you could do that. And that is in a more normal market, though, it's pretty common. You haven't seen that in a while because the cost of borrow has been so low. It's been so easy to get a loan that sellers don't need to do a carry back. Basically, what happens is you're now the lender. Meaning, hey, they're contractually, the buyer is contractually obligated to pay you over a certain length of time. And that can vary. And sometimes that is a smart thing to do. Sometimes it's not very smart because the person buying your home is not a great credit. So it just completely depends on the deal, who it is, what are the terms of the deal, what are the interest rates you're getting, et cetera. Now, as long as it's backed by the home, right, that you can take the ownership of the home back, I think that's the number one parameter you should make sure you have. But you want to also make sure that there's a good chance that this person will be able to fulfill the requirements with that carryback. So I wouldn't be against it, but make sure that the details are all in your favor and you're at least getting a reasonable interest rate to take that credit risk. So definitely something to consider, but the devil is always in the details. All right. Thanks for the call.
Hey guys, this is Matt from Merced. Just love the show and everything you guys do and find it very educational. So thank you. My question is about relative strength. I'm curious just how it's calculated and what length of time is typically used when they're calculating relative strength of a company versus the market, as well as what the near-term performance is typically, you know, if there's any statistics based on if a company has or 90 for relative strength, or if it's lower, do they typically underperform? Is there a sweet spot where you would find better near-term performance? Just curious, any information you guys have on that? And thank you again. Bye-bye.
No, it depends if what type of relative strength you're looking at. Now, RSI in chart form is typically goes from 30 to 70. Those are the kind of the major lines. If it's below 30, it means it's oversold. If it's above 70, it's overbought. So there's oftentimes, if you're looking at a chart, that's what you're probably looking at. That's called RSI, the RSI index. So that's mainly a charting tool. It's one tool. I wouldn't use RSI in itself as a reason to buy or sell something. Now it can give you some short-term indicators for a bounce or that it's going to pull back because it's overbought, but it's not something that I would tie my investment strategy to, my trading strategy. It's a secondary, frankly, probably a third level consideration. There's a lot more important things like chart pattern, volume, economic backdrop of the sector, etc., that are far more important than short-term RSI reading. So I like that you're looking at it. It's something that we do have on our charting, but it is kind of unique when we call it the stochastic RSI. So it's a little bit different, but it's on the bottom. It's not our first. Our first indicator is MACD. Our second is volume and what we call Williams percent R. And then lastly would be our get stochastics RSI, which is a proprietary indicator. So all those things are helpful, but it's the last on the list. Let's just say that. So that is RSI.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where principals and InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are independent financial advisors. For clients, they are fiduciaries. Steve and Justin have a duty and a commitment to always place the interests of their clients ahead of the firm. This is different from the way many other organizations operate. And one way you can realize the benefit of an association with KPP Financial is to know that KPP practices parallel investing. This means that the personal investment accounts of KPP principals participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. It's an important difference. You can learn more anytime at investtalk.com or reach out to Steve Peasley and Justin Klein by emailing or calling their Irvine, California office. The InvestTalk radio and podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with questions, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve. My question coming from an early investor, pretty young here, but I guess I have some capital here in my portfolio that I'm wondering kind of where and how to diversify it. I currently have SPY, VU, Tesla, Apple, Google, Amazon, Walmart, and one of my favorites is Airbnb. I guess my question is, you know, what are some of your opinions? I know coming as an early investor, the market can be pretty scary. What do you think of those companies? I tried to keep a little bit aggressive, but still have some type of safety in there as well. And regarding those companies, do you think there's any other companies that are out there that could provide some more growth, especially in the tough markets we're in right now? Thank you.
All right. Now, you don't have, I think, enough positions, and you own Tesla, so I'd sell that immediately. The other one that I'd be more concerned about is Airbnb. We're in the down cycle. I'm just hearing a lot of anecdotes in regards to the vacation rental market, and that bookings have dropped off dramatically. And so many people, everyone says we have a housing shortage in this country. No, what we have is everybody investing in vacation rentals because the yields are very high, 15-18% if they're done well. But that's in good times. Now we're in bad times. So there's gonna be a lot of vacation rentals on the market probably. That's a little thing about, I think, the housing market and heavy Airbnb places. And Airbnb comes out with earnings, I believe, this week or next week. So you're probably gonna get some color there on where bookings are at. So another name that is overvalued and I wouldn't own at this time in this cycle. Now, you're a young investor, and what I would first say is don't just get caught up in the big names. There's record divergence between the large cap stocks, the names that you know, versus the small cap stocks. When I say divergence, meaning valuation. So the best opportunities are in those smaller names. And you're a young investor. You have time to deal with the volatility, handle the volatility, and you're going to find much better opportunities in smaller cap names. Now, you're new. So while you're going along, like you're making a mistake in Tesla, right? You've probably already made a mistake in Airbnb. So you need to back up. If you want to just have exposure to the market, those VU, the SPY, they're pretty much the same thing. So you shouldn't really own VU and SPY, which are, for everyone else, VOO and SPY. Those are both S&P 500 index ETFs. Pick the one with the lowest fee and stick with that one. And having your exposure that way. And then learn and then slowly maybe trim from that and deploy it into some smaller names that have better valuations, that are more interesting, have more upside longer term than those big names. So don't be afraid to back up, learn a little, get your eyes wide open to all investment opportunities, not just the names that you know, understand different sectors, and you'll be able to succeed a lot better than just sticking with those large cap names that everyone owns, right?
Hey, Justin or Steve, I have a question about tax loss harvesting and the wash sale rule. I want to sell my position in ARKG, A-R-K-G, and use the tax loss and use the remaining income to buy FHLC, which is the Fidelity Healthcare Fund. I was just wondering, are these two ETFs too similar where a wash sale rule would happen? We'll listen to your answer on the next podcast. Thank you so much for your help. Take care.
Absolutely not. I mean, ARKG is filled with a bunch of crappy Ponzi stocks, even though it's in the genomics and biotech. And there might be some slight overlap with this healthcare ETF, but you know the healthcare ETF is going to be far more weighted towards health drug companies, actual drug companies that produce profits and dividends today, as well as like the United Healthcares of the world, et cetera, and the insurance companies. So yeah, it's definitely well different enough. You know, I think what you're thinking of is if you go, for example, you sell SPY, which is an S&P 500 ETF, and you go buy VOO, which is also an S&P 500 ETF, just one's by Vanguard and one's by iShares, the same thing. That's drastically too close. But just because it's roughly in the same healthcare space, very, very, very different types of companies within those. So I think you're good on the wash rule there. Thanks for the call.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. And Steve and Justin, thank you for your loyalty. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments. Your rating is a vote of confidence that leads to higher visibility and causes more people to discover and listen to InvestTalk. So please tell your friends and family members about the free InvestTalk downloads at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and InvestTalk.com. Remember to include your brief question when you review and rate on iTunes. And of course, your calls are always welcome 24/7. Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Serena in Napa Valley, how you doing? Or in Napa, how you doing, Serena?
Hi, I'm a younger person. Okay. I recently worked at a job where they offered me the benefit of having a 401k plan and company stock.
Great.
However, I've left that company in order to pursue higher income so I could support myself a little better.
Oh, that's always a good thing.
Yes. And now I have these teeny little balances, and I'm not sure if it would be beneficial to me to keep it, roll it over, get a check, or what I should do.
Do not get a check, okay? Because then you'll have to pay taxes on it immediately. And you probably got a higher paying job, so you might be in a higher tax bracket. You definitely don't want to pay taxes on it. When you say teeny, are you talking about under $1,000?
Yes, I've got about $500 in 401k and about $300 in the company stock.
Okay. The company stock, is that in the 401k?
Looks like it.
If it's inside the 401k, I would probably sell those stock, and I'd roll that 401k into an IRA.
Okay.
It's very simple to do. You can go to a bank, you can go to Schwab, you can go to Fidelity, you can go to almost any one of those and say, hey, I have a 401k, I'd like to roll into an IRA, and they'll go out of their way to help you.
Does it cost anything to do that?
Free. Well, let me rephrase that. Sometimes the 401k people charge like $30 or $50, but most of them do not. It's generally free.
Okay.
Then when it's in the IRA, you can put it in a money market, you can buy a mutual fund with it, you can add to it up to $4,000 a year, and if you're young, and you do sound young, it would be wise to add to it. Does the new company offer 401k?
No, not yet.
Okay. So then I'd roll it into an IRA, move it out from where it is today, and just you can go to the bank and put it there if you wanted to.
Okay.
You know, use CDs. But don't take it. Because, you know, this is your retirement. You're going to build it over the years to come.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Thank you.
Hey, Stephen, Justin. It's Steve Ogercron here from New Hampshire. Love the show. Quick question for you. When you guys run your support and resistance numbers, can you give me a little bit of a debriefing on what you guys are exactly looking at so I can start looking at it myself, too? Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Sure. There are a few factors that become support and resistance. Obviously, moving averages, I typically like the 50 and the 100-day moving averages. I think those are the most important moving averages. Some companies tend to find support more at the 50. Some companies tend to find more support around the 100. Just depends on the company, how volatile they are. So moving averages also are very important. Also, previous breakout areas. So if you look back in the chart and the price has been chopping sideways and the price had broken out above that and now it's retesting that area, oftentimes that's very strong support as well. And then previous pivot points. So you're talking about double bottoms, triple bottoms, etc. That can be strong support. And then lastly, Fibonacci levels. So Fibonacci retracement levels, I like to combine those with other factors as well. So this goes into chart reading, and chart reading is more of an art than a science. And there are various factors that come into creating support and resistance. And really it's about being able to identify those various factors, and the best ones line up two or more factors to create very strong support.
Now, if you have a question about a stock or an IRA, college savings plan, well, maybe buying a house, mortgages, reverse mortgages, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
The stock market is volatile. It's constantly changing. So how are you positioned? Is your portfolio properly balanced, or are you taking unnecessary risks? You can get guidance anytime for free if you go to investtalk.com and take the brief Riskalyze quiz.
Hey, Stephen, Justin, it's Art from Tucson. I guess this is a question for Justin, since he's the one that recommended a while back the book The Fourth Turning by Strauss and Howe are the authors. Since then, I've listened to the book two times, and I've gotten a written copy as well. I was so impressed with it. The book provides an incredible framework to view history with. It's based on 80-year event cycles and generational composition cycles that react to these events. The book was written in 1997, and it's validated because of that. As far as I'm concerned, it completely predicted, in a general sense at least, the division and the angst of our current society, the pandemic, and the possibility for big world turmoil and possibly war. So my question is this. According to the book, around 2025, the fourth turning should be concluded with either a favorable outcome and a new first turning, or perhaps an unfavorable outcome, and then who knows? So Justin, as one whose job it is to not predict the future, but I guess play probabilities on it, do you have any thoughts on how this fourth turning may conclude? And is there anything we could do as investors to prepare for an unfavorable fourth turning? Thanks for the book recommendation. Thanks for all you guys do. Yeah, I'd love to hear your reaction to this and your thoughts on our near-term, few-year future. Bye.
You're right. A lot of the things that they discussed of what the fourth turning would be, which they prognosticated would be start around 2005, 2010 time period. It's never an exact date, but generally, and obviously we had the financial crisis and that precipitated this this kind of lost a decade plus that we're dealing with now, that's creating a rise in populism, very similar to what you saw in the 30s. There was a rise in populism, slow economy during the Great Depression, I guess you could say. And then you had the rise of populism that led to Hitler and World War II, etc. And so you have similar dynamics playing out today. Now, what that ultimately turns into, it could be a major one-time turning point, big event, like World War II, or it could just be something that kind of builds, I think. But in the end, I do think we're going to come into spring, where things are better. There's maybe less domination of politics by corporations, and maybe return. There's some reform there. That's a potential. It also could just simply be a new change in the world order. And that's really what it was, right? After World War II, it was the ushering in of the liberal world order. And that created the boom times of the 50s and 60s. And that was the first turning. And that's where there was a really high trust in institutions. And by the fourth turning, as you would know now, we're in a very low trust of institutions. So is the return of trust, that could be very very positive. It could be something like, hey, we're going to onshore manufacturing. We're going to bring all the jobs back overseas, and our economy is going to boom. And we're going to stop protecting the rest of the world. We're going to let the rest of the world fight and have their problems. And we're going to be siloed to a more regionalized, multipolar world where we produce most of our goods here, and we're very reliant on self-reliant in North America. That could be the ultimate end result of this because of political pressure, geopolitical pressure, the shock of the pandemic. What exactly comes out of this? I know it's going to be positive, but there's pain in the middle. And we're still in that pain period. Now, people's lives, and this is all about the length of a human life, and human lives have kind of been pushed out a little bit farther. So the date's probably more like 2030 versus 2025. So I still think we have probably more like 8 years left instead of 3. But, you know, we'll see. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but it's going to be an interesting and challenging time to make money. But you can do it by focusing on businesses that are in the need. In crisis periods, big tech companies, not so much. Real, like I said, molecules in the ground, things that run day-to-day life, that's going to be in high demand and high value in this fourth turning. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.